Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, along with Dr. Irene Sills, Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. HealthLink on Air is produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. For the break, Dr. Sills, we were talking about just how important it is when a child with a chronic disease, specifically diabetes, goes away to college, and how important it is for them to have a roommate. Tell us more about that. What kind of a roommate? And it seems like there's a lot of concern about that issue.
The ideal roommate is someone who has a brother or sister with type 1 diabetes, but that's unlikely to happen. And you can't pick a roommate just because you have diabetes. The school assigns someone to you. But I think the student has to have an honest conversation with their roommate about diabetes, what they do, and what they might need help with. The roommate has to be honest with the child, the young person with diabetes, and say what they will help with. And that could be anything from just calling 911 in what seems to be an emergency, or going down the hallway to get the RA, to even giving them an injection of glucagon if they are unconscious. This all is the planning that needs to get worked out ahead of time.
Now, that's a lot of responsibility for a roommate. Have you, in your experience, in your practice, what has your experience been with regard to college roommates?
The roommates are, from what I'm told, are very happy to learn all these things. The idea of actually putting a needle into their roommate's arm is probably a little bit daunting. I ask our patients to show them what the glucagon looks like, and some kids are much more amenable to it. Luckily, this is not something that happens frequently.
Right. Now, you mentioned the RA. In your experience, do the RAs usually step up to that kind of responsibility?
The reports that I get from both the kids and the parents are that the RAs are good at doing this. Type 1 diabetes occurs in 1 in 600 school children. It's the most frequent common chronic disease, most common chronic disease after asthma. So there are just thousands of kids with diabetes at colleges. This is not a small population.
But the point that you're making really is one where a parent, in looking at a college with their child and in investigating the kinds of roommate or housing situations, they need to explore what the supports are that are built in.
Exactly.
Both in terms of the, perhaps even the flexibility within the college to switch someone's roommate if need be, and or find a good RA situation for that
someone who child. Feels comfortable doing what they need to do.
Getting back to the kid themselves, it's a lot of responsibility that has to be taken on at quite an early age when you have a chronic disease. I would think that's true for any chronic disease. You need to be able to manage your own problem and be responsible for yourself. And yet, at the point at which kids often go to college, we wonder whether they're truly adult enough. Even the best laid plans, parents giving the best training early on, issues of judgment, the influence of alcohol, the peer pressure, all of that. Mm-hmm. In your experience, do you think the kids that you see rise to that challenge? Or
some are, some don't. Some are capable, some are not capable.
And what does a parent do in the circumstance where they may find that a child is...
They have to try to work with the child to do as much as they can do, and some parents remain involved to a larger extent.
So the helicopter parent, in other words.
Right. The parent, the cell phone, the text. There are parents who are still reminding their kids about their diabetes management through technology when the kids go to college. So I think what we are understanding, although we have called in our society 18-year-olds adults, we know that they're really not adults. They're not ready to assume the responsibility of complete economic independence, completely living by themselves, making very, very serious long-term decisions. And many, I guess your sociologists are suggesting that we have an emerging adult period of time, that kids don't go from adolescence to adulthood, they go from adolescence to emerging adulthood to adulthood. And that emerging adulthood may last until 24, 25 years.
I might add that things I've read recently suggest that it might go beyond 30.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that I've actually read or heard interviews where they've raise the issue of what is an adult, or when do you feel like you are an adult, and depending on who you talk to, you might get a quite a variety of answers. I've heard people as old as 35 say, I'm not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, so. I think healthy societies support each other at any age. Yeah. So I think that there is some wisdom in that.
Getting to the specifics, though, again, about a kid who's a young adult who's at college, do you recommend that they wear like an ID, a diabetes ID? I mean, if a kid's going to go out with their friends and their friends, let's say, already know and accept that this child has diabetes, this youngster has diabetes, do you recommend that they, I mean, what types of behaviors or safeguards do you recommend that they engage in if they're going to go to a party?
We recommend that kids wear some medical identification, bracelet, necklace, or something around the ankle that identifies that they have type 1 diabetes and that they take insulin right from the start. The toddlers often don't wear anything because they don't like it. We have shoe tags. The adolescents don't like it because it stigmatizes them, and they fight this all the time. But definitely, that's very, very important. And I find one of the hard places is in the car, where everyone in the car can be knocked out and not be able to speak up for the person with diabetes. So it's not good if you have friends in the car with you who know you have diabetes. They may not be able to mention it to an emergency medical technician coming to a scene. So that's absolutely recommended.
And I would think also if you've been out drinking, there are certain prohibitions for a child with diabetes
as
well.
I tell my patients that they can have one drink. They look at me like I have horns on my head because it's like, Dr. Sills, how can you? I say one with the hopes that they quit at two.
What are the dangers?
Well, alcohol, if taken on an empty stomach, can lead to low blood sugar. And getting drunk has just all the dangers of not being in tune with your body, starting to vomit and get dehydrated. So I try to get the kids to limit it to one to two. But with some kids, we're just not speaking the same language. And parents are frightened. Frightened,
understandably.
Frightened. Yes, they're frightened during their high school years of the same thing. And it's very understandable.
Now, also, I understand that a youngster with diabetes may also exhibit behavior that could be misinterpreted.
Absolutely.
Tell us more about that.
If your blood sugar is low, you may get kind of an anxiety attack feeling. Your pulse rate goes fast, you sweat, you look pale to someone looking at you. But you can also get problems where your brain is just not getting enough sugar, and you start to act disoriented, staggering, looks a lot like you're intoxicated with alcohol, and it can be misinterpreted. And of course, any kid acting that way on a college campus is going to be felt to be intoxicated. They're not going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
And that's where the ID comes in.
That the ID is helpful in that instance. Absolutely.
Have you had any incidents in your practice where kids have gotten, you know, arrested or mistreated because their behavior was misinterpreted?
No, mm-hmm. Not to that extent. Mm-hmm. I've had kids who have acted bizarrely and the police have been called. The child was wearing a pump and they didn't recognize the pump, but not to the point of getting arrested.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about sex.
Okay.
Difficult topic, but one that I'm sure you deal with all the time, especially with young adults and adolescents. Is there a special message for kids with a chronic disease like diabetes?
Well, for women with diabetes, it's very important that they understand preconception planning. If you're a young woman with diabetes, it's important that your diabetes is in good control at the time that you conceive, because there can be birth defects that are associated with having high blood sugars and out of control diabetes.
But in the case of a youngster at college, I would think they were trying to avoid pregnancy in most cases.
Right. Exactly.
So what specific concerns?
But if there is an unintended pregnancy and you have not been taking care of your diabetes, it's even more frightening in many ways than an otherwise unintended pregnancy. We start talking about these issues with kids as soon as they
become
seem mature enough to handle the message.
And sadly enough, that often takes place way before they're going off to college.
Yes. well, sadly or not, but it should take place well before they're going right. off to college. I think discussions about pregnancy prevention and for the men to act responsibly about intimacy and those kinds of acts, those are messages that really need to start at 14 and 15 and maybe even earlier.
Well, actually, I was engaged at one point in a program about talking with your kids about sex, and we advocated starting to talk when they're old enough to be even preschoolers yeah. begin to talk about body parts, sexuality, and all that. So I think all of that kind of bespeaks what you said earlier in the interview, which is the earlier you begin to help the individual child become responsible for themselves and their behavior and their bodies, the better.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's all part of that same continuum.
Right.
Tell me about mental health, though. I would think that there are particular issues
yes.
surrounding...
Yes, and that's one of my largest concerns in this, these kids going off to school. Everybody who goes off to college feels the stress. They don't quite know how to navigate. They don't know how many hours they need to study. They have all kinds of peer pressure that makes them, you know, gives them the message that it's okay to stay up all night and party and no rules any longer. But kids with diabetes have the added problems of dealing with their diabetes, maybe not doing as well as they did when they were at home because they're doing it by themselves. The stigmatization of telling your friends that you have diabetes, many kids try to hide this. There is a prejudice against people with diabetes in terms of being life partners. So
I think that's probably true with a lot of chronic diseases,
I would agree. So people want to be sure that they're known for who they are and loved for who they are before they're willing to share that they have diabetes. So these are just added burdens that can make for social ostracism and anxiety.
I think it's hard enough today to go off to college or to the world of work, whatever your choice is at that point, and become an adult, as we were saying, or try to take on the responsibilities for yourself. And at the same time, to deal with the social mm-hmm. stigma must make it just that much harder.
I prepare parents, and what I say to them is that even if a child's done very well with their diabetes during their later high school years, that they need some slack that first semester or two. That the diabetes control may not be as tight or as wonderful as it has been, but it will get back there. Just give your child some time and help them navigate these waters. And this happens all the time. The kids come back for their first appointment, and it's just not quite as good. But you have to let kids try and learn, and then they will succeed.
Do you find that behaviors, stress reduction behaviors like meditation or yoga or running or any of those kinds of activities that might reduce stress, more helpful as well for kids with chronic illness?
I would imagine so. I have no professional knowledge about it. We do encourage kids to exercise for mental health as well as for physical reasons.
Well, I know you have a workshop coming up in September to help kids transition.
Yes.
And you run those semi-annually?
Right. Every 6 months, we have on a Thursday evening, we have a workshop for parents and for high schoolers anticipating going to college. And we kind of give you a list of things you need to think about. We have some good conversations. Parents can share their worries amongst themselves. And we can try to learn how to do what we do better.
Well, we're going to probably be promoting that going forward. So Dr. Irene Sills, Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, thanks so much for joining us today. This has been a very interesting topic and one that I think has relevance to many, many people out there. We're going to take a short break. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR.